is it worth simming September? Are the playoff races done and dusted? Is there any point to any of this at all? That's what we're going to talk about on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows that Wake Me Up When September Ends was about the 2024 MLB season. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and it's a green day.
Interesting intro. I do think we have some interesting conversations to be had about the month ahead of us. There is now less than a month remaining in the 2024 regular season. And we're going to start off the show thinking about what is there left to be decided. I would argue there is a lot left to be decided, but I do know what you are getting at. We're also going to talk about the waiver process that is going to kind of happen over the course of the next 36 to 48 hours and some players that maybe will have new teams even in going into September.
I promise it's weird and interesting. I know saying we're going to talk about the waiver process makes you want to just smash that 30-second skip button, but trust me.
I trust that our listeners are going to be patient and know that, like, yeah, Jake and Jordan can make... I'm not going to promise that it's that interesting, but we will talk about that. We've got a couple major league debuts happening, including Rhett Lauder, another pick from last year's draft, making his debut today with Cincinnati Reds. We're going to talk about owners. Yes, let's talk about some owners. And then, of course, it's Friday, so it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. But Jake, let's start with what you started with, which is that as the calendar soon turns to September, as we look at the standings, normally we're like, oh boy, who's going to make it? And as it stands now, when you look at the playoff odds and you look at the standings and you look at the gaps between the teams currently in postseason position, the teams that currently aren't, and the state of the teams that are not in postseason position versus the ones that are, and it feels like we know our 12 postseason teams. Now, I don't think it's locked in, totally set in stone, but when you look at the teams that are currently in position, it doesn't seem on the surface like we have that much left to decide in terms of who will make the playoffs.
When the calendar flips to September 1, which is my parents' anniversary. Happy anniversary, Mom and
Dad. Shouts out, Jake's parents.
Yeah. Shouts out. We love, love. When the calendar flips to September 1st, I want to feel like the meme of the Joker going, here we go. And this year, maybe that'll change between, you know, today and, I guess, September 1st. But I don't feel that way right now because of how the standings are situated. Now, look, there is certainly a number of different interesting, compelling, enthralling, scintillating storylines and races that we will have over the rest of the month. But I do believe that we know our 12 playoff teams.
So that's, yeah. So that's a good place to start, right? Will these be the 12 teams that we have? Now, if you compare it to last year, there were really at this point like 14 to 15 teams gunning for 12 spots. And you had the Mariners were in better position. You had the Cubs and Giants were in better position last year. And ultimately, we know the D-backs and Marlins snuck in. And we know that the Mariners capitulated and the Blue Jays ended up getting in the American League. And of course, we had the American League West kind of race come down to the final day. Now, right now, we are looking at the 12 teams, which Fangraphs gives the 12 teams that are currently in postseason position. All of them have at least an 80% chance of qualifying. So that's a good kind of bar to set, to kind of set the stage for why you feel confident in saying that.
So last year on this day, 16 teams had over 10% odds. Now, the reason I know that doesn't sound very high, but the Marlins last year at this time had 11% odds and they made the playoffs.
Yep.
And so improbable things happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe I shouldn't have been such a bedwetter because that's kind of where we're at right now. The Red Sox are at 18%. The Mariners are at 16%. The Mets are at 19%. Mm-hmm. So perhaps... And those gives us 15 teams over 10. Like, sure. Maybe I should open my heart a little bit more and let the joy in.
Yeah. I mean, what I would just say is, I think I agree. It's clearly the most likely scenario. It's just right here, is that we'll get these 12 teams. But it is enough time for something to happen. Then you have, I mean, again, who are we really talking about? We're talking about the Mets and the Red Sox in very similar positions, right? They are kind of in running parallel tracks in their respective leagues.
I would like to just quickly zoom division by division, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So American League East, Yankees are a game and a half up on the Orioles. Mm-hmm. Both of those teams are very likely to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They have the two best records in the American League. Whichever team does not win the American League East will be the top wildcard team. In the American League Central, the juggernaut that is, the Guardians are a half game up on Kansas City. The Twins are 3.5 back of Cleveland. Okay. All three of those teams are very likely to make the playoffs. The Twins have 84.7% odds. Royals are at 87.7, Guardians at 96.3. If there is a team that drops out and the Red Sox take that last wildcard spot, it will either be, it'll be Cleveland, Kansas City, or Minnesota, probably, right? It's hard to envision the Red Sox chasing down Baltimore or the Yankees. In the American League West, this is the closest thing we have to a high-stakes race, where the Astros are 4 up on the Mariners, and the Mariners are not in the mix for a wild card spot.
Right.
The Mariners are 2 games above 500. Their only chance of making the playoffs is to chase down the Astros. Any thoughts on the American League before I zoom to the NL?
I mean, again, though, I don't know if we'll zoom back out and talk about the stakes within these races, that even if all these teams do make the postseason, like, those are significant. You know, I think, like I said, you know, the division race, it's not, and this is more relevant in the National League. We might not know who has home field advantage until the final weekend, whether it's for the whole league or just in each league, right? The number one seed, who's going to have World Series home field advantage, who's going to avoid the wild card round, like, all of those things we are probably not going to know until very late.
I like to think I'm an intelligent person, relatively. However, I know and I understand and I comprehend that it is obviously, no doubt, better to have the bye. Skipping the wild card round is better every time. I understand you can contort yourself into an argument against it, right? But it is better. Mm-hmm. However, I just watched the 2023 postseason less than a year ago, and I watched the Texas Rangers and Arizona Diamondbacks take that math, crumble it up, and throw it in the garbage can.
Totally. So, yeah, I mean, but that doesn't mean that teams aren't going to be trying to get it, right?
But so, I guess the point I'm trying to get at is the gap in importance and urgency and desperation between what the Mariners are feeling.
Totally agree. And Red Sox, right? Like, the teams who making the postseason in some form is what is going to define success for them. 100%. Like, I totally agree with that.
Let's move to the National League. In the National League East, the Philadelphia Phillies are up 6 games over the Atlanta Braves after a absolutely hilarious win last night. The Phillies did not look competent. They were walking quite a bit against Charlie Morton and couldn't get any hits. And then Brandon Marsh, 3-run homer. Nick Castellanos, 2-run homer. Phillies beat the Braves in Philadelphia. The Braves have just so many injuries. If I was a National League team, I would be terrified by their pitching. They are still formidable. They have an 85% chance of making the playoffs. However, if there is a team that was going to fall out of a spot and provide a spot to the Nueva York Mets, whose odds currently sit at 19.5, it probably is going to be the Braves, who are only 3 games up on the Mets for that last NL wild card spot. Jordan, while I'm talking, please let me know if the Braves and Mets play again this year.
I do believe they play once. I know the Phillies and Mets play a couple more times. So, relevant to this, I just put out a piece yesterday, which is just looking ahead at September and seeing what the best series are remaining. Basically, for every team pretty much has 9 series remaining starting this weekend. And it's basically just highlighting, you know, the top 2 or 3 series ahead of, you know, basically over those next 9 series. And I do believe the Braves and Mets play one more time, and that is correct. The Mets go to Atlanta for the second to last week series, the final weekday series of the season is three games in Atlanta.
So that could be pretty spicy. In the NL Central, just a disappointing, embarrassing showing from the Cubs, Cardinals, Reds, and Pirates. I know the Cubs have been playing better ball recently, but they dug themselves too deep of a hole to climb out of. Probably. Yeah. The Brewers are currently 9.5 up on the Cubs, Cardinals, Reds, Pirates falling below that. The Cubs' chance of making the playoffs right now is 3.8%.
However, I do want to hit on the Cubs here quickly. We mentioned how the Red Sox and Mets are kind of have followed similar paths. The Cubs and Tigers are kind of represent the same things in their respective leagues. Now, the Tigers have just been playing really well now for almost 2 months. So that speaks for itself. And you know, they still sit, you know, a good amount back in the wild. They're five games back at the wild card, but they're playing Boston this weekend. So that's compelling, right? I mean, they could at least make progress in that respect. But it obvious long shots, whereas the Cubs, the thing I just wanted to mention about the Cubs, and I noticed this a couple weeks ago, I know sometimes strength of schedule can be misleading. They have one of the easiest schedules remaining in baseball, and that has been shown over the last couple weeks as they've gained some ground because they've been playing some very bad teams. Their challenge is they don't play anybody that's directly ahead of them for the rest of the way. I mean, they play like the Dodgers at some point. So it's going to be a lot harder for them to make up significant ground with the teams that they are directly competing against. That said, it is a favorable schedule, and it would not stun me if the Cubs are still within two, three, four games over the final few weeks. So I think that it's I'm not going to disagree. I it always drives me crazy when people like disagree with the odds. It's like, it's a math problem. Like, that's not how I feel. Like, I totally understand why it's at the level that it's at. But I think that the Tigers and the Cubs are the long shots here that do not be surprised if they have 10% odds, you know, in a couple of weeks, and we're taking them at least a little bit more seriously.
In the NL West, the Los Angeles Dodgers are 4 up over the Diamondbacks and 5 up over the Padres, both of whom are in the top 2 wildcard spots. The Dodgers grasp their grip on the division feels simultaneously insurmountable and tenuous. Like, I can, because I've watched the Los Angeles Dodgers win 99 of the last 100 NL West crowns, it is difficult for me to envision anybody but Buster Posey dethroning them, right?
Yeah.
However, the Diamondbacks have been the best team in baseball for a long time now. I know they just lost a series to the Mets, but you can envision the Diamondbacks getting hot enough to kick the Dodgers off their perch.
And it could start this weekend. We have the super weird 4-game set Friday to Monday in Arizona. So massive opportunity. You know, we have that going on in Philadelphia where it was like, okay, this is Atlanta's last chance to make Philadelphia sweat atop the NL East. Well, going into this 4-game series, the Diamondbacks are 4 games behind the Dodgers. If they can win the series, all right, now we start to have more of a conversation. But with how much help, I know Freeman's now been injured, and I know Glass now a little bit scary. They're not totally back, but I feel like the Dodgers are kind of starting to find it in a way that we saw them earlier this season. And I think they're going to still end up pulling away as good in Arizona and in San Diego have played.
So of all of these races, what compels you the most? What are you most interested in zooming into as we reach October?
Yeah, I mean, so again, last year, in terms of division races, we had the AL West come down to the final day, and that had huge implications. Now, obviously, it didn't end up, you know, hampering the Rangers in a way that we thought it did, right? That's true. But in the moment, it felt significant that they choked it on the final day, because that is what happened, right? And that the Astros managed to do it. Like, that was all true. We also had the Orioles trying to fend off the Rays, right? That was a lot of what we had last year. The Yankees were irrelevant last September. I think that the Orioles, here's a note. I don't know if you've seen this, but I just thinking about the Orioles going for another division title. This would be the first time the Orioles won consecutive division titles since 1974.
I remember that.
Yeah. So good season, really quality season for the boys in orange. But that is, I mean, again, that kind of puts in perspective how, what the AL East has been. And even as good as the Orioles were for such a long time, you know, during that Adam Jones stretch, it was not involving division titles every year because you had these Yankees and you had these Red Sox and you had these Rays. So that compels me. And I think the Yankees Orioles, because both teams are really good, but also clearly still have issues, I think that is very interesting to me. And just thinking about one of these teams having to play in a wild card round, more so the Yankees, I think, but is super compelling.
I think what I'm interested in is directly tied to what expectations were and are for various teams.
Yeah.
So while I do think the American League Central is fun, the stakes don't feel as dire there, because I understand that the Guardians at one point held a 10 game lead, but if you told Cleveland, Kansas City, or Minnesota at the beginning of the season, if you told those fan bases, you're going to get one of the wild card spots,
right,
you probably take that.
Let alone two. Right. You said that the Central was going to have three postseason teams. And part of that makes me like this race more, because the idea of either the Twins basically lying in the weeds the entire season and still winning the division, the Royals becoming the first team to go from 100 losses to winning the division is astonishing. That's what I just wrote about this week. Or the Guardians managing to hang on and end up having one of the best records in baseball with what we think is like a very, very, very flawed one-dimensional roster. All of those things are very compelling to me. But I know what you're getting at. In terms of expectations, stakes, I think stakes is a very key part of this. Yeah. And I think that's totally valid.
The AL Central is the house money showdown.
Sure.
Where
sure.
Falling ass backwards into the wild card is still accomplishing the goal that the team set out for itself at the beginning of the regular season. Yeah. Whereas in the American League East, I think if either of these two teams don't win the division, the Yankees or the Orioles, they should be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because the Orioles have had such an opportunity. And this week was a great example, right? Yankees lose a series to the freaking Nationals. And yet the Orioles roll out Cade Povich, a rookie who's doing his best against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Yep. I think for both of these teams, Yankees and the Orioles, not winning the division would feel like a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And again, if you go lower down and you talk about the stakes and the pressure and the fan discontent, that's where you do have to talk about the Red Sox and the Mariners and I guess the Mets to some degree, although again I still can't really figure out what Mets fans' expectations were going into the season or what they should be, so I'm putting them a little bit to the side. But Red Sox have not missed the postseason three consecutive years since 2012. I mean, like, they might be heading towards, I think they're going to win more than the 78 games they've won the last 2 years, but that's significant. And then obviously we know how embarrassing the Mariners situation is. And, you know, they're playing a little bit better since they fired Scott Servais, but they're going to have to play a lot better if they're going to obviously catch Houston. So those are certainly compelling. And then in the National League, I guess you could apply some of those things, same things to the Cubs if they manage to work their way. And the Cardinals, who we didn't even mention. I mean, the fact that they are already, I guess they managed to bounce back against San Diego these last couple of days. But like, that's another situation where there's clearly going to be some hard questions that they're going to have to answer. But stakes in San Diego and Arizona don't feel – Arizona, they're feeling good. San Diego, it feels high stakes, but I don't know. They feel like they're in a pretty good spot. Like, they were probably hoping to make a wild card, and it seems like they're going to do that.
The one area with stakes is Philadelphia.
Mm.
Because while the Phillies won last night to push that lead to six, if the Braves win the next three, which they totally could, they should have won last night.
Yeah.
They were up 4-0 in the middle of the late innings, and Brian Snitker kind of screwed the pooch. If the Braves can leave with a 3-1 series victory, that's going to be a three-game lead. And when we talk about house money, right? We talk about playing free. The Braves' expectations right now are so much lower than the Phillies. Phillies held a massive lead in the division. They have all the guys who are healthy.
Yep.
The Braves are working with a skeleton crew. it's a direct opposite of what we've had the last couple of years with these two teams, where the Braves have these enormous expectations rolling into October and the Phillies are just like chugging a Miller Lite and like swinging really hard. And it's like, oh, ho, ho, right? Yeah. Now it's different. Now there's like, you could feel it too at Citizens Bank. I was there the last 3 days. Like when the Phillies offense just puts up these just soggy innings, they're hitting into an outrageous amount of double plays right now. Mm-hmm. Like, again, they really only need to win one more game over the weekend to feel okay. But if they don't, it's going to get dicey.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say, and then we can move on to some waiver stuff quickly, is the fact that we are even thinking about the Phillies and Brewers competing for either the one seed or not having to play in the first round is wild. And while the Brewers are going to coast to a division title here, I mean, that's another thing here that, sure, you can point out, well, who cares if the Phillies have to play in the first round? They'd love to play in the first round. Then they can get their momentum and then just go, whatever. That is also kind of staggering to me. Like that, and the Dodgers, who knows, right? Maybe those three teams, how they end up being seeded at the top, if assuming they all win their division, even if you put the Braves aside, that is also compelling to me. But
one more thing about seeding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last year, the Brewers were the three and the Phillies were the four.
Right.
And the conversation about the five and the six was you'd way rather play the three seed Brewers than the four seed Phillies. And there's something too cute about saying that almost. It's like just win as many games as you can, get good seed, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the Brewers just rolled over against the Diamondbacks and the Phillies put the Marlins into the toilet and flushed them down. Right.
Yes. Yes.
And so now I'm looking at this. If I'm the Braves, I'd rather get the six seed and play the Brewers than get the five seed and play the Diamondbacks.
Right? Sure. Or like end up playing the Phillies in the first round, which I guess is possible. So, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, those conversations I want to save to the final week because it's like it's not worth going through those machinations. But it is relevant. Like those are all to have all of these teams at the very top of the standings in both leagues have such similar records will mean a lot will be changing about the bracket in a very late state. That I do feel like is true. And I think is maybe a good place to leave this, but we'll see. Maybe we will not end up with these 12 teams. I think that in and of itself will be a compelling thing at the end, because the very simple way to put it is if we end up with a team that is not one of these 12 teams, something very wrong happened for some of these teams.
If you had to pick one thing unexpected over the last month, what would you go with?
You mean, just to be clear, like someone that makes it that isn't, or
it can be one of these non-12. It can be the Mariners catching the Astros. I guess that counts. It can be the Braves catching the Phillies. It can be for me, I think the most interesting thing that I think is possible is a team knocking the Dodgers off in the West.
Okay. I don't think that I'm not expecting. I think it's like something like the Cubs or Tigers being mathematically alive in the final 3 days.
Okay.
Or something. Okay. I think more so the Cubs or the Red Sox catching one of the central teams.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will explain waivers. And welcome back. Can you sign this waiver for me?
What does it say? What am I agreeing to here? What am I handing away? What rights am I just, you know, forfeiting by signing this waiver?
You are now allowing me to say whatever I want on our podcast in perpetuity.
That certainly changes things. No, this is a different kind of waivers. I don't know why they're called waivers. I don't really care about that right now. Here's what's happening. We really but this became a mainstream topic a year ago when the Angels, after really going for it at the trade deadline, went in the opposite direction as soon as they traded for all those players and wanted to save some U.S. dollars going into the final month because they were no longer expecting to make the postseason. And so this is an option.
And they wanted to get under the luxury tax threshold.
And they wanted to get a luxury tax, which I don't know exactly how relevant that is with some of the teams we're about to talk about. But the point is, they got rid of a bunch of players last season at the very end of August with the idea of, we can dump some salary, teams will just assume this salary, and we can give these players a chance to play in October because they need to be in an organization by September 1st. So that is why this is happening now. And so right now we have reporting that the most notable players being placed on waivers. Now, again, this is not a guarantee they will be picked up because it requires
other teams. You can keep playing. So it's basically like these dudes are on teams that thought they were going to be good. They're not good anymore. And instead of just like holding this dead anchor, you can just throw it up in the air and hope someone else is going to catch it. And you don't have to pay for it.
We already saw this earlier this season with Ty France, where the Mariners placed him on waivers and he was still playing and everyone was confused. And then the Reds claimed him. And the Reds decided, we will pay Ty France for the rest of the season. Now, that doesn't mean they have to pay him for next season. They could just non-tender him, you know, that they can make that decision this winter. Now, however, in some of these cases, like I think the most notable and important player on this list, which is left-handed reliever Taylor Rogers with the San Francisco Giants, he signed as a free agent and is owed $12 million for next year. So this is really them salary dumping without getting anything back. They are deciding if someone will take this Taylor Rogers contract. And by the way, Taylor Rogers is still very good as a way to give us some financial flexibility going into this offseason. Go for it, because what is really significant here is, and especially when you see like the Cardinals putting Tommy Pham on waivers, and you know the Rangers putting some of their veteran outfielders, Robbie Grossman, Travis Jankowski, is kind of saying, yeah, like the Giants, Tyro Estrada, Taylor, I know Tyro Estrada hasn't been good. They're saying, yeah, you can take these players that have been useful to us because we're not trying to win anymore. Like that's correct. That's what they're saying. And that is news, right? I would say. Now, we can look at these teams and be like, yeah, they're toast. But when they admit it like this, that is also significant.
Oh, my God, he admit it. Yeah. Right.
And if the Giants still wanted to win, they wouldn't be just saying, here, you can take one of our best relievers. That wouldn't be happening.
Now, when you say the Giants want to win, let's just be clear. Like the players and the coaches, they all still want to win and they go and they try and win every day. The front office, the people running the team are essentially all we can deduce is the actions, right? Not the words. And their actions are indicating to us that they're not going all in to make the playoffs anymore. Tommy Pham, Nicky Lopez, Estrada Rogers, Robbie Grossman, and Travis Jankowski and the Rangers. Interesting that the Rangers have thrown their arms up. They're done, defending champs. They've been done. I understand. This is obvious. Michael A. Taylor on the Pirates. Boy, does he stink. No one's picking him up. Drew Smyly from the Cubs, I believe. Right?
Yeah.
So with the Cubs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
so
do these players filter to other teams, right? It goes in opposite order of record. And so what happened last year is the Angels put these guys on waivers, Lucas Giolito, etc. And Cleveland picked up Giolito, Cleveland, who was on the fringes of the playoff race. And so while the narrative at the time was, this is an important thing, it didn't turn out to be important because Cleveland kind of fell out of it and we never saw Giolito in October, right? And I think that is a similar thing that could happen this year, where Taylor Rogers, who we say is the most impact player on this list because he's a well above average to very good left-handed reliever that teams could use, Taylor Rogers is not going to end up on the Phillies or the Orioles. He's a little bit different because of the money left on the contract, but you could envision a scenario where the Tigers are like, you know what? Sure. Screw it. We'll take Taylor Rogers. We'll non-tender him for next year, right?
Well, but that's what they can't do. That's what I'm saying is for Taylor Rogers, that's why the money is relevant, because in theory, you are assuming a guaranteed deal going into next year. So that might limit it. Maybe it makes it more likely that he gets to a team like Baltimore or the Dodgers or whatever. But it also is a guy that would be super helpful for a lot of these teams in the middle.
I can guarantee you he will not get to the Dodgers because the Philadelphia Phillies, Jose Alvarado went on leave. Yeah. And they don't have a true left-handed reliever, all respect to Tanner Banks.
Right.
So if he gets there, the Phillies will 100% pop him. It's not like Middleton cares about the money. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. But Tommy Pham, I could see getting picked up. It's got to be the right fit. It's got to be the right room.
Yeah.
Like bringing Tommy Pham in on August 1 is different than bringing him in on September 1.
Sure. And he hasn't, I know he had those big first few games. Like, he hasn't been great, you know? So, like, doesn't mean he can't have a good month, but there's not that much impact there. Like, Rodgers is the one to watch. Rodgers is the one that if he ends up with the right team and the team really goes for it, he could be pitching very important innings in October. That is in play if someone wants to take on the money.
Kansas City, go get Travis Jankowski. Great fit. Bring home Nicky Lopez, baby.
No. Is that what they need? I don't know. We will see. By the way, we really hope that our friend Vinny Pasquantino is not injured after last night. We do not have an update on that.
Tommy Pham. Does Tommy Pham play in October?
Oh, man. Also, it's just so funny, right? It's like, oh, perfect fit. He goes back to the Cardinals. This is so cool. And now there's like three people at Cardinals games and they're putting him on waivers.
Amazing. Can't predict ball.
I don't know, man. I am going to say no, but don't tell Tommy Pham because he's not going to like that.
Don't doubt him, Jordan. Don't do it, Jordan.
I'm not doubting Tommy Pham.
You're the haters.
I am.
You're the haters he's talking about.
I'm not doubting Tommy Pham. I'm doubting the team that might claim him, whoever that is, which is now that's going to be the Mariners, and it's going to be really funny. So that's the waivers. So we'll see. Taylor Rogers, he will have a new team maybe next week, and we will talk about it. Let's talk about another big thing that's happening. Today on Friday, Major League debut of one Rhett Lauder.
Hey, do you know what you sit on the toilet with?
What?
De butt.
Another de butt. We've had a lot of butts.
MLB de butt.
That's what it says on their, you know, how they have like the patch.
De butt. Right?
So Rhett Lauder is going to pitch for the Reds on, I think, later today. They have a doubleheader against the Brewers. And my first instinct was, oh, this is, I guess, when you see a call-up start for a doubleheader, you think, oh, this is temporary, right? However, the entire Reds rotation from opening day is currently on the IL. And Rhett Lauder, who was the 7th overall pick last year out of Wake Forest, has been ridiculously good in Double-A and then made a Triple-A debut last week. And now is probably one of the Reds' 5 best starters. So he will likely be in the Reds' rotation for the remainder of the year. The Reds, who had a miracle yesterday, one of the worst baseball games of the season between them and Oakland, also one of the best, but really kind of embarrassing for everybody involved. They have certainly disappointed. They are injured, and they are probably not going to make the postseason, but they're trying to get trying to mix something up. They call up Rhett Lauder. Rhett Lauder is someone who really this was not someone that was known super well in high school, but classic. There are a lot of cases like this for his age, COVID, right? So the senior year was COVID, and so people didn't really see him in the same way that you normally see high schoolers. And so he goes to Wake Forest and becomes one of the best pitchers in college baseball of the 21st century.
If Paul Skeens didn't exist, a lot more people would know about Rhett Lauder because Lauder wins, or his Wake Forest wins his first 18 starts. Yep. Then he goes to Omaha and loses to Skeens. Right.
But it was awesome. It's not like Lauder was bad. Awesome. Yeah.
One of the best games we've ever seen. Yeah. One of the best games you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's a very fun watch, very high effort delivery, but very under control, super athletic.
Yeah.
Fastball, slider, changeup with great command. And Jordan.
Yeah.
Most importantly, he is the first Rhett in MLB history. Ring the bell and sound the who gag.
Oh my gosh. Because we have
a new name. I think this is something I want to start tracking and celebrating next season. Whenever we have a new original name that makes the majors, it is worth a cheer.
Wow. This is fascinating. So first major league Rhett. We've had some minor league Rhetts. There's one in the Astros system that I believe is in AAA. So Rhett Koba got scooped, man. He's been in AAA for the last few months. He was like, I'm going to be the first big league Rhett, and he couldn't quite do it. We're also getting the first major league Caden. Caden Dana is the first. I know that seems hard to believe, but Caden Dana, I know we've had some Cade, but this is the first Caden. that we've had in the major leagues that the Angels are calling up to start on Sunday. So you're right. I think this is a good thing to track.
I got to be honest, dude. Like, being the first big leaguer with your first name is so badass. It's so cool because we've had so many big leaguers and someone was the first William, you know? And so yeah, now we've got the first Tyler.
I would love to know the first Tyler.
First Kyle.
But yeah, Rhett, I mean, I'm looking like there have been a good number of minor league Rhetts over the years. Rhett Wiseman, who was a good Vanderbilt outfielder, he never made it up. So Rhett Lauder making history. And we now have 8 players that were drafted in last year's draft already in the big leagues, which is the most in a draft to make the big leagues the following season since 1989. So this class is already fairly historic in that sense. Of course, we've seen Skeens, we've seen Cruz, we've seen Langford. And now here comes Jacob Wilson up with A's. And now we have Rhett Lauder. So excited to watch him. The Reds have really been a tough watch recently, and I'm really excited to see what he can do against Milwaukee.
2 more topics before we take a break. I want to talk about ownership. Okay, yeah. Not home ownership, but Major League Baseball team ownership.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Neither of us own our homes.
No. I think it's more likely I'll own a home before you.
Jordan.
But what?
That you think it's more likely that you'll own a home before me? That is the coldest, most frigid take I have ever heard. I live in New York City. You live in rural Ohio.
I know. That of course gives me a pretty sizable advantage. I'm just, you know, yeah. I don't know. Maybe you're out of New York and you say, and maybe I end up in renting this beautiful home in Oberlin for longer than I expect. Like, we'll see. More likely.
It's anybody who wants to study the cost of living on an identical salary, give us a call.
We're talking about like the, you know, the D-backs postseason odds. They're actually higher than that. Probably the Phillies postseason odds. Anyway, let's talk about ownership. Baseball ownership, owning a baseball team.
Sounds fun. You want to go splitsies?
That I don't think will be happening for either of us anytime soon. Sorry to disappoint.
BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. If you have a bill lying around and you're trying to
more than
go
a bill, we're going to need
a half.
A literally a billion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not like a dollar, like a $100 bill. I was like, you're going to need more than that.
Who's got a Hamilton? Let's buy a team.
Yeah. So while we will not be buying a baseball team anytime soon, neither will Mark Cuban. Weird transition, but hear me out.
So is that the shark?
He is a shark. He's not the shark. But I don't know. We both watch a good amount of Shark Tank. Who is the shark? When you think like Shark Tank, who's like the first shark you think of? Because to me, it's not Mark.
It's Mr. Wonderful.
It's Mr. Wonderful. Right. And I don't think I don't think Kevin O'Leary is interested in buying a major league team either. I don't think that's part of his portfolio. Right? If you were pitching a major league team to Kevin O'Leary, he would just be like, this isn't really my space.
Jordan, we should go on Shark
Tank.
That's
more of a Damon line, but yeah.
We should pitch the Pirates. Like like Mark Cuban, who is from Pittsburgh, I believe.
Yes. So I will set this up, but yes, go ahead.
Mark Cuban is from Pittsburgh. We walk into Shark Tank. What's up, Sharks? Would you like to buy the Pirates?
And we just you know what's also good about that is the tanks come, the people that come in that pitch, and like they really just want to deal with Mark. And sometimes like, because he has the most money, right? And so, and the other Sharks will be like, you're just here for a deal with Mark. I don't want Lori gets all angry. Like you're not here for us.
No, Lori, I want you to own the Pirates.
Okay. Anyway, why am I bringing this up? I have had this thought over the years, as Pirates ownership has been as frugal as it gets. And I thought, if only there was some really rich guy from Pittsburgh that loved the Pirates and would buy the Pirates and could turn the Pirates into something even remotely resembling a middle market team. I'm not asking them to spend $300 million on payroll, but it would be nice if this Pirates team with these incredible fans who was lost for so long would actually try to invest in the team. And I thought, oh, Mark Cuban, he's right there. He's got more money than God and he could do it, right? There's no doubt. He loves sports. He's from Pittsburgh.
Dropping the bucket.
And so I've wondered about this. And there was an interesting Twitter interaction between a someone on Twitter, basically someone tweeted in Pittsburgh being like, this is after the Pirates have had a very embarrassing week, said, "Dear Mark Cuban, I'm once again asking you to buy the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm looking forward to hearing you soon regarding this pressing matter." And someone responded and said, "I talked with Mark Cuban about buying the team back in 2006. He loves the Pirates, but says the owners will never sell due to their business model. They aren't required to spend the money, so they never do. And they make big profits every year through TV and everything else. Lost cause." And I was like, okay, who is this person responding? This person has 2,000 followers, whatever. Mark Cuban quote tweets it and basically verifies it. And Mark Cuban gives this insight into Major League ownership. He says,
nail on the head here.
He says, "If someone offered you a job that paid $25 million or more per year to stand in Market Square and let the entire city of Pittsburgh yell at you, would you take that job? That job is owning the Pirates. Why would they sell?" So when you read that the first time, you think like, oh, that sounds terrible. Everyone in the city is yelling at you in Market Square. And then it's like, oh, but you're making $25 million a year, and that's really all it is. From Mark Cuban's perspective, as someone who's been in business and made a lot of money and pissed a lot of people off along the way, but also is one of the richest people on earth and doing the thing that he likes to do, he's like, these people aren't going to sell because they're making money no matter what. Like, this is how this is going to work. And so this, in contrast to another baseball team in the state of Pennsylvania, is, I think, just very valuable insight into how all of this works. Because ultimately, you have a section of owners who are owning a baseball team because it makes a lot of money. And then you have a much smaller portion of owners, like John Middleton with the Phillies, who view owning a baseball team as a not just a privilege, but as a responsibility. And this is kind of the rhetoric, but also just messaging, however you want to say it, whether it's misleading or not, that him and the late Peter Seidler in San Diego have made very, very, very clear, right? And I think it is just a really, really tough reminder of just how all of this is going to work for a long time, and how ultimately we are probably always going to have a very small number of owners who view owning a baseball team as a responsibility. And he said, this is the quote. I mean, this was a couple weeks ago. Todd Zielecki had a story on MLB.com. And there's a lot of good quotes in the story that really speak to just Middleton's perspective. But the last one just really hits. He says, quote, "It's why I keep telling everybody, it may be a privately held business that we own, but it is not a private organization. It is a very public organization. It is a stewardship. We have an obligation. We are accountable to the fans and to the city. If you don't approach it that way, you shouldn't be an owner, in my opinion." So obviously, if we had more owners with this perspective, we would have a lot more money spent on baseball players. And instead, most owners who do not speak publicly really ever say, "I am in a business and this is my family business. And no matter what we do and how much we spend, we are going to make money. And that is how that is going to work."
And this relates to a video that went viral on the internet machine yesterday, mm-hmm. which included Nick Castellanos accidentally realizing he's a socialist.
I don't know if I would go that far, but it is definitely relevant to the conversation we were having. So
Nick Castellanos is asked, I believe, by the folks over at MLB Fits. Is that correct?
I think so. I think Alex is his name. Who does these interviews, yes.
And he asks, not to be, disparaging, a relatively straightforward question. A good question, an easy question. He says, if you were commissioner for a day, what would you change about baseball? And Nick Castellanos, with the most interesting man in the world, without missing a beat, says that he would make sure that owners who don't spend money, owners who are content with losing multiple years in a row, would face some sort of punishment. And he likens the experience to his own as a player, saying that if he is bad for a number of years, he faces consequences, right? And owners should face a similar dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is an interesting one because we talk about being forced to sell. There's all kinds of versions of this. When he's talking about like sending owners down, the idea of like owners being forced to sell every 3 years, like it is not that simple to sell baseball teams. And there are obviously only so many people that can buy them, but he's right, right? Like there's ways. And of course, baseball has come up with some vague rules to try to discourage tanking and stuff not, but tanking is also, that is a slightly different conversation than actively not investing in your team over and over, right? There's different versions of that. They're related for sure. But there's different versions of that for sure.
But the quote that just hits me, the game is above true ownership. Hell yeah, Nick. Hell yeah, brother.
But again, it's not an accident that he is very comfortable. Now, Nick Castellanos is going to be willing to say that no matter what. I understand that. However, it's not a coincidence that he is on the team that we just talked about, having an owner named John Middleton who feels that way. Because they're on the same page. And that's how people with the Padres talk too.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Phillies right now, mm-hmm. who committed a lot of money to a lot of players, mm-hmm. that organization is raking it in right now.
San Diego too.
Yep. They are selling that place out. It is packed every day. Okay. And people are buying beers and shirts. Yep. And people are watching the games. And the organization is
for sure
hand over fist right now.
And again, it's not one-to-one. Not spending does not equal losing. Spending does not equal winning. But we've seen it. It's still, but again, it helps. It's healthy. Saw it with the Rangers. We've seen version, like, it's good, right? So anyway, but it's really more about the energy behind it and right. just reminder of the extreme sides of the spectrum of ownership mentality that yeah. will ultimately define our sport for as long as we will be covering it.
Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we will tell you the truth about what is good, what is bad, and what is ugly. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Let's review the week that was, a thing that is good, a thing that is bad, and a thing that reminds us of legendary Marlins, Braves, Nationals, and Giants. Second baseman, Dan Ugla.
My good this week is Kumar Rocker. I am so excited about this. This is someone who was very, very famous as a pitcher at Vanderbilt University, and then very, very injured to the point where when the Mets selected him in the first round of the 2021 draft, they were like, never mind. We don't want to sign you. We don't like the medical. That forced Kumar Rocker, just telling people now when he becomes an MLB star. Kumar Rocker.
Kamala.
Good. That forced him to go basically into limbo, where he did not pitch for a year. And then the Rangers were still like, you know what? We're going to pick you even higher. Even though you haven't pitched in the last year, we'll save some money. They take him third overall in 2022. One of the more stunning, possibly the most stunning moment of a draft that we've been at or witnessed was the Rangers taking Kumar Rocker third overall. But there were still obviously questions about the medical, and ultimately those came to fruition when he needed Tommy John surgery last year after barely pitching. And at that point, it was like, all right, this is really unfortunate. We've interviewed Kumar Rocker. We are such a big fan of this player, this person, and want to see him succeed. But it was a tough couple years to be feeling super optimistic about his trajectory, right, based on these injuries. But he's come back from TJ and has just been beyond overwhelming in the minor leagues. I mean, this is essentially, he looks like what he was doing when he was at his peak at Vanderbilt, which is throwing 100 miles an hour with one of the best sliders you've ever seen. He reached AAA. He threw five nearly perfect innings with 10 strikeouts. And while I do not expect to see him in the major leagues this year, this will be one of the stories of camp next season, for sure, is Kumar Rocker trying to make the Rangers rotation and probably having a good chance to do so. And that is awesome because those 2 years of drafting, not signing, injuries. Oh, he's actually healthy. Oh, we'll take him third. Oh, just kidding. He needs TJ. You know, he's going to be 25. He's turning 25 in November. It feels like it's been a while, but it's also like, yeah, of course. Like, this guy's one of the greatest pitchers we've ever seen in college. And so to see him doing that in the minors and again just makes me really happy. And I'm really excited to see what happens next. Again, it seems like they're taking it really slow. Obviously, the Rangers could use some pitching help, but it's too late in the season. So they're just going to focus on next year. But Rocker will be one of the stories of the season going into next year for sure.
What's good for me? Mike Cameron is tweeting about Daz Cameron. Mike Cameron, legendary.
He tweets a lot. He's a great Twitter account.
Great Twitter account. Mike Cameron, who I believe put up 46 wins above replacement in a impressive Major League Baseball career. His son, Daz Cameron, was one of the moments I realized I was never going to be a professional baseball player. I was at a showcase. Daz was there. Mike was there watching Daz.
Of course.
My dad was there watching me. And Mike looked more impressive than my dad, with all due respect, from an athletic perspective. And then Daz ran the 60 and I stumbled through the 60 and I was like, maybe not going to happen for me.
No,
anyway,
probably not.
Daz Cameron is on the Oakland A's. Doesn't play a whole lot. He's not that good. He's solid up and down guy. If I was Daz Cameron, I would go crush Korea.
Yeah.
Seems like a good candidate. Yeah. Anyway, Mike Cameron tweets earlier this week. My kid is playing in Cincinnati and trying to bunt for a base hit. Come on, man. It's the Natty, for goodness sake. Okay. So freaking funny. Because Great American Ballpark in Cincy is the easiest place to hit.
Home runs.
Homers in baseball.
Home runs specifically, yes. Yes.
Homers. And Mike Cameron's just watching his son on MLB TV. And he squares the bunt. And he feels like the rest of us being like, you dodo, what are you doing? Someone responds, someone with the account Fire David Bell responds, you aren't at the game? Mike Cameron responds, man, I'm at soccer practice. I got more children than the young man playing baseball. Hell yeah, dude.
That is so funny. Mike Cameron is one of a kind. That is very good.
And then someone says, I love this energy, Mike. He responds, he already knows. Save that for Minnesota or somewhere else.
It's also funny because the A's hit 5 million home runs in Cincinnati this week. Let's stay on Twitter for our bad.
No, don't do it.
So I am generally pro Stephen A. In general.
I am
mostly
pro
because
Stephen A.
Can I say why? Can I say why?
Doesn't talk about ball, but go ahead.
Well, this is relevant. This is why it's in bad. But I'm just leading up to saying life is short and he makes me laugh. So so that's kind of the simple answer as to why Stephen A. is, I'm generally pro. However, to your point, we don't need him talking about ball. Because Stephen A., who is, of course, a fake Yankees fan, like a lot of other casual TV personalities, he went on TV and was like, Aaron Judge is really only having this season because Juan Soto is hitting behind him, which is,
now,
of course, not the case.
Which, let's just be clear, if Juan Soto was hitting behind Aaron Judge, that would not be the main or only reason for Aaron Judge having amazing seasons.
Yes.
Unfortunately for Stephen A. Smith, the number of times that Juan Soto has hit behind Aaron Judge this year, that number is zero. It is zero. It has not happened once. Now, personally, if I was running the Yankees, I would flip them.
Just to say. Stephen A's onto something.
Stephen A knows what he's doing here.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Great example. Here's why. Sorry to railroad your
No, you're fine. Yeah.
Thing. Like, going on national TV and talking about a thing that you don't know anything about is frustrating for people like us who spend our lives doing this. And it's like, it's, I guess, different than us talking about fantasy football, obviously. But it's like, people are watching Stephen A and they're like, yeah, he's right. But he's not.
Right. But I'm also putting into bad is our beloved Jazz Chisholm responding to the video of this, because this is really maybe just an example of just this website being bad, twitter.com. It still works if you type twitter.com, by the way. Is Jazz responding to the video and adding Stephen A by saying, Ohtani also has two MVPs behind him, so that's irrelevant, sir. So this
lot to parse.
Is, this is in bad because this is adding on to the misinformation and misunderstanding train, because Jazz appears to be defending Judge by saying, by agreeing that Stephen A, seemingly also thinking that Juan Soto is batting behind Aaron Judge.
He just got there. He just got there, dude.
So that's
already. You know what's going on in May?
But the other funny part is that he seems to be making like an anti-Ohtani argument, whereas as if they're still in the same league. It's like, and I know that like I know that the segment on ESPN was more impressive Judge or Ohtani, but it's like, again, we're why are we giving into the premise that is already false?
Is the other thing is that Juan Soto does not have an MVP.
Yeah, he doesn't. Probably should, but anyway,
Jose Abreu does though.
He sure does. That's my bad. What is your bad?
The Pittsburgh Pirates had just an unbelievable baseball game this week. An all-time stinky poop fest showing on Wednesday against the Cubs, in which they started a man by the name of Paul Skenes. And Paul Skenes
usually
five
they
innings,
win.
Two earned runs. Huh? Yeah.
Usually they win when that guy pitches.
Instead, the Pirates, they did race out. They were looking like they were going to win. They were up, 10 to 3. They lost 14 to 10, allowing 2 in the 7th, 3 in the 8th, and 6 in the 9th. And that prompted a tweet from Paul Skenes' famous girlfriend, Olivia Dunn, LSU gymnast, social media star. And, you know, she has been a character in the rise of Paul Skenes, at least through our lens, because of what we do. Right. We are baseball people and she is she's a character. And MLB is clearly trying to up her profile and use her to promote Skenes. And that is, I guess, smart and eye rolling in both ways. But she just tweeted a gif of Paul Skenes in a Pirates uniform on the mound saying to himself, "You got to be kidding me," with a lower that says, "You got to be kidding me."
Yeah.
Now, here's why this is bad. Livy Dunn can and should tweet whatever the heck she wants. I wish more family members and significant others acted this way, right?
For our sake.
We have seen this from some people, like friend of the show, Ashley Rodon.
She's tweeting about the strike zone every time Carlos takes the mound.
Bingo. And I think this is obviously not how this works. Pirates ownership is not going to be induced into being more aggressive with their spending because a college athlete and girlfriend of what their best player is tweeting things. Fostering more distrust and disdain for the way the Pirates have been doing things is, I guess, good, but therefore bad that things have gotten bad enough.
Agreed.
To, like, Livy Dunn sat there at her computer and was like, "Is this worth it for me?" She is not someone who is just, you know, posting things on social media willy-nilly.
No. Right? But to that point, like, and right. Oh my God, the opposite. I mean, Livy, if anyone knows when and when not to tweet, it's Livy Dunn. I mean, my gosh, right?
Smarty pants.
She's so like, she's, and also, by the way, she not only has she said all the right things, she's been like an ambassador to like promoting Pirates baseball. And like,
she's like, "I love saying, Pittsburgh.
Like, I love Pittsburgh." Like, you, what an incredible thing to have. And now you have her very rightfully being frustrated that Paul Skenes throws five good innings and your team allows 25 runs in the last three. Pirates, my gosh. I will see the Pirates in about 3 hours. So we'll see how they are doing. Let's go to Ugla. My Ugla this week is a very basic fun fact that caught my attention. Corey Seager reached 200 career home runs. Okay, nice. Good for him.
Kind of feels low to me.
Feels low. again, has missed a good amount of time. He's not that old, right? And he's missed a lot of time in the regular season with injuries. But the fun fact that went alongside it is that that is the most home runs ever by a left-handed hitting shortstop. And I was like, what? Really? And so then I was like, oh, okay. It's not that it doesn't make it impressive for Corey Seager, but I was like, that's kind of wild because, like, I feel like recently when we talk about, like, these prospects that are coming up, we're like, oh, he's left-handed shortstop. He's like Corey Seager, right? Gunnar Henderson is the guy, right? And Jake, if you look at left-handed shortstops, all-time home run list, Gunnar Henderson is already ninth. Like, this is just not a thing. Wow. And Corey Seager was more of a unicorn than we realized. In fact, second on the list is somebody who I've never heard of named Dick McAuliffe. But Brandon Crawford is third, and Didi Gregorius is fourth. Stephen Drew fifth. Brad Miller is sixth. Okay? Like, this just completely blew my mind. Now, obviously, if you look at the all-time shortstops home run list, you have some switch hitters, right? Like Francisco Lindor and Jimmy Rollins. But in general, I mean, it's just completely stunned me. And now we'll just think about left-handed hitting shortstops, whether it's Gunnar Henderson, whether it's, you know, Marcelo Meyer is kind of the next wave for Boston. Like, I will just think about them in a very, very different way because I didn't realize how rare this really was. So there you go.
I, for my Ugla, was going to talk about Samuel Aldighieri, an Italian born and raised pitcher that will be making his debut this weekend for the Anaheim
tonight,
Angels.
He was,
tonight. Yeah. He was traded to the Angels in the Carlos Estevez deal. He is the first born and raised Italian pitcher in the big leagues, I believe. That is amazing. That is awesome. That is Ugla. More players from more places is good for our sport. He's solid. I think they're calling him up way too early. Like, he should, it's the yeah. Angels. Like, he should not be up. I was with the Phillies yesterday, like, asking around. They were like, yeah, he's pretty good, but, like, I would have probably waited longer. But
it's not the Angels. Yeah.
So, in researching Mr. Aldighieri, I went to his hometown in Verona, not New Jersey, yes. Verona, Italy.
No, the Verona. Yep.
OG Verona. Mm-hmm. And I started looking at some of the baseball facilities.
Oh.
Yeah. Just to see, what are we working with? What did Sam Aldighieri grow up playing with? Mm-hmm. And the name of the stadium, Centro Sportivo Mario Gavagnin Sinibaldo Nocini. Sorry, my Italian is rusty.
That's a long, oh my gosh. That's, you got to say that every time. They must have a nickname for it.
Yes. Yeah. They must. The Yard. They just call it The Yard. And the professional team that plays there is Verona Baseball, and they are sponsored by Technovap. Now, okay. I believe their official name is Verona Technovap, in the way that, you know, a lot of European sports things have the name of a company in there, right? We've seen this before. Mm-hmm. Red Bull, mm-hmm. You know, half the soccer teams and all. Every cycling team is named after.
That's true, right? That's very standard. Yep.
Now, why am I bringing this up, Jordan? Why am I talking about Technovap?
Please tell me.
TECNOVAP. When I saw Technovap, I thought, are they sponsored by a vape company? And I Googled it, and that is not what Technovap does.
Okay.
Technovap is a company that creates products for efficient, eco-friendly cleaning. We accompany our customers towards cleaning process with zero environmental impact. This company makes, like, super high powered cleaning products, like the goods, the big stuff. Their website is very strong. Why choose Technovap? They've been present in the steam cleaning sector for 39 years, founded in 1985. Here's why I'm bringing this up. We often on Twitter.com are asked if a sweep is three, and a mop is four, what is a five? And we have never provided a strong answer to that question.
Or a six, right? The minor leagues, they have six game series.
Yeah.
So, okay, but.
And today, I propose that a five gamer, which we had, I believe, the Red Sox and the.
Well, the Blue Jays. You're talking about the Blue Jays? I mean, so sort of. That was related to the Danny Jansen thing.
It's never on the schedule. It's never on the schedule, but it's possible.
Schedule. Sure.
Anything over minors, four games.
We could apply it to the minors, yeah.
Anything over four games is a techno vap.
Mm-hmm. I love
it. Do you approve? You approve?
I'm in. I'm currently looking at the, again, Baseball Reference, a miraculous thing. We have like standings and stats for the 2023 Italian League, which includes Tecnovap Verona, who finished 12-22 last year. I'll throw this in the chat here. But anyway,
they're at the forefront of innovation in the steam cleaning sector, according to their website. So I think that's cleaner than a mop, if you ask me.
You vapped them. Just absolutely.
You vapped them.
I wonder how that's pronounced. In Italian.
If you're Italian and you know how to pronounce Tecnovap correctly, email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. I'm glad that I was able to take you on a journey inside my screwed up brain and how I got to Tecnovap.
I appreciate that. So good luck to Sam Aldegheri. He will make Tecnovap Verona proud. And I think it's a good place to end this episode of Baseball Barbercast. Some quality baseball coming up this weekend. I will be going to see the Pirates in Cleveland. We'll see if I stick around for those games. But Red Sox at Tigers, interesting in the AL wildcard race. Royals at Astros. Astros won a close one last night. That's four games. And then, yes, Braves at Phillies, Dodgers at D-backs. Those are both four-game sets. And yeah, that Dodgers-D-backs one is definitely the one to keep an eye on. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz. As always, thank you for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We will be back on Monday. That show, due to Labor Day, will probably be coming out a little bit later, but you should still get it on Monday. So we hope everyone enjoys the holiday weekend. And we'll talk to you all very soon.